Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, you brought the wine tonight. It's in a paper bag. I opened it while I was in the bag, so I don't know what it is. I know it tastes complex. What are we drinking?
We are drinking. It is related to one of the films for tonight.
It is
called Game of Thrones wine.
I'm going to guess that it's related to King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
I believe it is because I was reading that there were lots of comparisons being made to Game of Thrones. And it was actually Game of Thrones was being blamed for why King Arthur probably would not be seen by very many people.
I don't see the comparison. There's a lot less boobs in King Arthur. There's just not that much going on.
But you know, you got the whole origin story kind of medieval thing going, don't you?
Well, we have a weird flow on the podcast tonight. We have five films we're going to talk about. I saw two, Hannah saw two, and we each saw the documentary, but about a year apart.
Yes.
So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be very one-sided at times.
Yes, except that maybe then some of the questions that rise to the surface will benefit people who are, trying to decide whether to go see these films.
And in the background, I have the Celtics-Wizards game on that I'm really not going to try to get bite off on, but I just need to watch it a little bit.
Okay, every once in a while we'll glance.
All right, I want to start with Snatched. This is a film you should have seen. In fact, if one of us was going to see it, it probably should have been you, even though we've already fought about this. Neither one of us should go in believing the other one would enjoy it more, because, you know, genres shouldn't be owned by just one person. But I think you would have enjoyed this more than me.
I suspect I would have. And I was truly bummed to miss this one. I wanted to see Snatched with Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn. It was one of those ones where I was waiting for it. And then unfortunately, when the screening came around, I was going to be out of town. And so I missed it. And I'm relying on others who went in my stead to tell me what they thought of it so that I can then probably be somewhat of a counterbalance to your opinion.
All right, well, Snatched is an Amy Schumer vehicle. She didn't write it this time. She's just starring in it because it kind of fits her comedian persona. Her character, Emily Middleton, is not pleasant. She's not someone you would raise your hand to go on a long trip with, which is what she's trying to do. She has these non-refundable tickets to Ecuador. She's trying to get someone to go with her because she just lost her job, she has no money, and her boyfriend just broke up with her. And you don't feel sorry for her. She's an awful person. Just a terrible person. And welcome back, Goldie Hawn. Goldie Hawn, who's been absent from movie theater screens for 15 years, wow. Since 2002's The Banger Sisters. We haven't seen her in a movie screen since then. She looks just fine now. And she's in a very rare role for an actress over 70. You know, they just do not make right roles for women over 70 in Hollywood very much, mm-hmm. Especially in a large blockbuster Hollywood film. So they go to South America, they fight a lot, they get kidnapped together, and it's one of those things where you end up feeling sorry for the kidnappers. Oh, you kidnapped the wrong women. They're going to talk your ear off and accidentally kill a few of you and run away in the Amazon and have all these adventure troubles. Okay, it's a comedy, but it's not ha-ha funny. It's funny. I laughed a few times. I guffawed a few times. There are a number of scenes that are just hysterical. But most of the jokes are just mean and off-putting. How many times can someone go up to Amy Schumer and just call her ugly and fat? There's just so many ways you can do it, and that's what they do. Trainwreck was funny because, you know, you almost kind of laughed with her, not at her, as she, you know, went from one-night stands and back home. And it had great supporting casts like Bill Hader, LeBron, Vanessa Bayer, Dave Attell. Great. In this one, the supporting cast is Wanda Sykes and Joan Cusack, who plays a mute, and Christopher Maloney, the guy from Law & Order SVU, and he's funny at times, but it doesn't match the caliber of Trainwreck. I don't believe it when someone says, if you like Trainwreck, you'll like Snatched. I don't see it. They're different. They've got a different feeling, they've got a different atmosphere, and which is why I just already look askance at people. It's like, no, this is for the Trainwreck crowd. It's not. It's for the mother-daughter crowd. It's coming out at Mother's Day. They want mother-daughters to go see it while their husbands and sons go to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. But it's like last Mother's Day, when there was a movie called Mother's Day that was terrible, and it's trying to get the Mother's Day money.
See, I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because the person who I spoke to via text about this film was a guy, and he told me that he thought this movie was hysterical throughout. And that if you like Amy Schumer, if you are an Amy Schumer fan and you like Amy Schumer's type of humor, which came across in Trainwreck, then you will like this movie. He found it funny throughout. He actually spoke about how there was a consistent funny as opposed to front-loading all the jokes. He found this film to be very entertaining throughout. He thought Goldie Hawn, it was nice to see Goldie Hawn back and that she had, you know, shades of the old Goldie Hawn, even from, you know, her laughing days, and that Wanda Sykes was a decent supporting character and that Joan Cusack was a decent supporting character. So I don't know what the difference is, but I don't think we can say that this was just a movie that is just for the girls and their moms to go see, because I'm taking the word of now it's sort of
you. No, because I don't think
him.
The girls and their moms will like it either. Goldie Hawn gets nothing to do here. She's the reactor. She doesn't get her one-liners, and she can. We know she's funny. We've seen her in comedies back in the 80s. She plays that character who, she's the fish out of water. She's the wrong place at the wrong time. She's not supposed to be in the Army in Private Benjamin. She's not supposed to be a football coach in Wildcat. She's not supposed to be cleaning house in Overboard because she's a millionaireess.
Another great flick, I must say.
I love all those movies, and she's hysterical in them because she's playing a character that's not supposed to be doing whatever she's doing. And here she does the same thing. She's a stay-at-home mom. She's divorced. She lives with five cats and a son who doesn't leave the house. And she's a homebody. She's not supposed to be in Ecuador, and she's not supposed to be kidnapped. Okay, standard Goldie Hawn character. But they don't give her any jokes. I guess they give Amy Schumer the jokes because she's just, you know, a child who never grew up properly. But I feel bad for that. Goldie Hawn could have maybe saved this movie. I want to talk about the people behind it. The writer, Katie DePold. This is her third kind of female-driven comedy in a row. 2013's The Heat with Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock, if you remember that.
Yep.
And last year's Controversy Lightning Rod, the remake of Ghostbusters.
Okay.
A comedy that also went, ugh.
But both of those were, I guess, divisive in their appeal. Some people really enjoyed
them. Everybody liked
The
Heat.
People like The Heat, and then quite a few people did enjoy the Ghostbusters
quite
remake.
Quite a few people. Like,
yeah. So,
quite
I mean,
a few.
Enough to make it, you know, I would say then that if Snatched is on par with the Ghostbusters, female Ghostbusters movie, and with The Heat, then I'd probably be okay with it. It means I probably would not love Snatched. I would probably find it sort of mindlessly entertaining in the moment and not something that I would ever think about, you know, a year from now.
And actually, I don't think it is on par. Well, it's probably on par with the Ghostbusters. I did not like that movie at all. But
I thought it was okay.
It's a step down for the director. Jonathan Levine, he did 2011's 50-50 with
I
Joseph Gordon.
That movie.
That was one of my top 10 films of
Absolutely
the year.
Absolutely, mine too.
And then he did another very good movie in 2013. It was actually a teenage zombie movie called Warm Bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. And then, okay, step down with a so-so Christmas comedy The Night Before, another Joseph Gordon-Levitt film with Seth Rogen. Mm-hmm. Kind of funny, but, you know, a step down from 50-50. And this one's just a huge step down. I thought Jonathan Levine was going to be one of those special filmmakers with skill and soul, and he goes from 50-50 to Snatched.
Well, he probably had higher hopes for it, when this was probably being developed, it was probably on the heels of Trainwreck's success.
And they didn't want Goldie Hawn. The studio did not want, like, Amy Schumer, she's power. She has Hollywood clout. She made it happen because the studio was saying, Goldie Hawn, she's not a draw anymore. She's been absent for 15 years. Who even knows who Goldie Hawn is? Well, we know.
Yeah.
But anyone 20 and younger probably doesn't.
Yeah, but then for those older, the Movies for Grown-Ups crowd, some of them might actually go to see this almost more for Goldie Hawn than for Amy Schumer. We'll see. It only got, I mean, it got a 39% on Rotten Tomatoes the last time I checked.
I believe it.
Which is higher, though, than the next movie you're going
actually,
to talk
I wanna,
about.
Actually, I don't want to make that in this movie. I want to split this up. We need to talk about a Hannah movie now. I want to talk about a Hannah movie. I want to take a break.
Okay,
I want to tell me about something I think which is more divisive than Snatched. It's called The Lovers. When you came out of the theater, I was at home and I got texts from you, and I got texts from John Armstrong, and I heard, oh, such and such kind of liked it, but was the only one. Such and such hated it so much, She canceled an interview with the director the next day.
Yes.
Tell me about The Lovers.
It was very divisive. It was very interesting coming out of this movie because I thought, all right, it was okay. The ending was very unsatisfying, which I think is the problem that you come out of it having just seen these last scenes being less than satisfying to you. Whereas someone like John Armstrong, who liked it, probably liked it for that bizarro ending that other people hated it for.
But the post liked it, I saw.
The post liked it. It's another one that is for movies for grown-ups, and it's about this long married couple, and it's a dispassionate marriage. They're both on the verge of telling the other one that they've been carrying on an affair and want a divorce. And then all of a sudden, sort of out of nowhere, there's this serendipitous spark in their marriage, and they end up carrying on this illicit affair with each other, the married couple, played by Deborah Winger and Tracy Letts. And basically, they're cheating on the people that they were cheating on each other with.
How quirky.
Exactly. And it's supposed to be a comedy, but it's really kind of sad. And I think if it's supposed to be a commentary on modern marriage, then that's really sad. And I think what happened was there was this disconnect between people who were watching it. Some of them were just completely offended by that take. And others just felt that it was funny in a kind of a melancholy way. And it was good to see you talk about Goldie Hawn being sort of out of the mix for a while. I hadn't seen Deborah Winger in quite a while.
I'm going to say like 10 years.
It's been a while. And I did not even recognize that it was Deborah Winger.
You mean Officer and a Gentleman didn't flood back?
No, whereas I just seen Richard Gere.
Saw him in The Dinner last week.
Saw him in The Dinner last week. And Richard Gere aged in such a way that his face always stayed the same. He looks the same. Deborah Winger has aged well, but looks different. And so I didn't make that connection to that person I had seen in Officer and a Gentleman and Terms of Endearment. So it was very interesting. It's almost like seeing a different actress. But she was, they're good. You know, the acting is good. It's just the whole premise was, to me, just not very enjoyable. And then there's this wild card where their son is coming home from college and bringing his girlfriend. And he's used to his parents being just completely dispassionate. And he's expecting them to split at some point. He doesn't understand why they haven't already divorced. He thinks they should have divorced a long time ago. He's reluctant to bring his girlfriend home, but he does because he didn't want to expose her to their relationship. And he walks in and it's like, this is not the typical parents I'm used to seeing, because that suddenly they were all lovey-dovey again and he's not buying it. And he's wondering what in the world is going on. But the character, the son's character, his name is Joel in the movie, it is the most poorly drawn character. And I think that bothered a lot of people too, that he suddenly would have these spurts of anger, and the girl who plays the girlfriend, who's very good, you just want her to go running for the hills and get away from this guy. And that's not what this movie is supposed to be about. And I just want to point out that girlfriend is played by Jessica Sula, who a bunch of us were sitting there going, where do I know her from? Where have I seen her? And she was that third kidnapped girl in Split. The one that you really just kind of don't, Marsha. The third one.
The one who is not the main girl or the other girl I recognize.
Right. And so it's like, oh, it's that other girl. And it's just such a shame because I think Jessica Sula, I think she deserves a better role. She deserves something that she can sink her teeth into. Hopefully she'll get a breakout role one of these days, because she made the most of what was a very minor role. And she elevated that role, I think. And so, bottom line, it's just it was just one of those films where people were divided over whether or not, kind of like a La La Land ending. It seemed like it was trying to go for that.
Comparing this to La La Land?
No.
One of the best endings of last year.
No. But it was like, that's the problem, is that that was one of the best endings, and you felt like they were initially going for that what if. Mm. Kind of ending, if it went this way versus that way. And it fails miserably. It doesn't satisfy in any way.
Well, I'm going to say the premise sounds intriguing. Like, I would like to watch this movie. I mean, it sounds, it doesn't sound like a ha-ha comedy, but more of a wry, tongue-in-cheek, perhaps kind of comedy. It's by a writer-director I'm unfamiliar with. His name is Azazel Jacobs. Apparently, he did a movie back in 2011 called Terry that was starred John C. Reilly. I did not see that. In fact, I never heard of it.
Yeah, me either.
So, no, I do not know this guy, but sign me up. I want to see this movie.
It's a long 94 minutes. I was so ready for it to end by the middle. You just kind of felt like, where is this going? And it's taking, wherever it is going, it's taking way too long to get there.
All right, we already led into it, so now we'll get to it. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. Before I launch into it, are you a Guy Ritchie fan? I want to, for the folks at home, I want to remind you who Guy Ritchie is.
He's Madonna's husband.
Ex-husband.
That's all I remember.
Think England. Think, you know, he really hit the scene as an indie guy with Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Mm-hmm. Exploded in 2000 with Snatch, because he had Brad Pitt talking about Dags and Caravans. Revolver, Rock and Rolla. Then he switched gears a little bit. Did two Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law.
I like those.
And The Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2 years ago.
I like that.
Great movie. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're coming from with Guy Ritchie. Are you a Guy Ritchie fan walking into the theater?
I am a fair weather Guy Ritchie fan because I liked the Sherlock Holmes movies and I liked Man from U.N.C.L.E. The rest of his movies were not my speed.
All right, I'm a bigger Guy Ritchie fan than you.
Yes.
I never saw Swept Away, the infamous bomb he did with Madonna. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that everything he's ever done is great. But everything I've seen, I've really liked. So he's tackling the 5th century Celt, King Arthur. But we start out with Arthur as a baby because he's going to float Moses style down the River Thames and get plucked out of the river by the brothel with a heart of gold, who raised them on the street. And he grows up rough, learns to fight, learns to fend for himself, and becomes this petty, small-time crook. What's his backstory? Where did he come from? His father, Eric Bana, was Uthar Pendragon, the wielder of Excalibur, the good king. And his brother, Jude Law, became the bad king. Vortigern is his name. Overthrew the king, who's I mentioned that was Eric Bana. So Jude Law is the evil king now, and the sword in the stone reveals itself, reminded me of the Disney movie from 63. Mm-hmm. And so all the young men in the kingdom are forced to go and try to pull the sword from the stone. Oh my gosh, Charlie Hunnam, as grown-up King Arthur, pulls the sword from the stone. Okay, now we're going to do this whole retake your kingdom, da-da-da, and he joins this band of merry men hiding out in the woods. Enter Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie has a trademark. People talk in a certain way, usually in a Cockney accent. He edits it in a certain way. We're going to talk in the present, but I'm going to keep flashing back to something that just happened. And they do that once early on, and it took me out of it. He did it because he had to do it, because he's Guy Ritchie. Charlie Hunnam's talking to this cop. Yeah, what? And for whatever reason, in a Cockney accent in 400s Scotland or whatever it is. And it's like, what we do? Yeah, we did that. And no, I don't remember it that way. It was just a bunch of Vikings. And it's like, okay, I see what you're doing. It's cute. Move on. Get back to normal. And so I appreciated it, but a lot of people probably took them out. Merlin. Mm-hmm. It's King Arthur. Where's Merlin? There is no Merlin. There's no Merlin in King Arthur Legend of the Sword. Allegedly, if this makes enough money, there are 5 sequels.
No.
There's 5 sequels to this thing. And I want to get to the... there's a bet laying here later. But there's a mage. There's still someone who can do stuff. Her name is the Mage. She's played by a girl named Astrid Bergès-Frisbé.
Ooh la la.
We've seen her before in the last Pirates of the Caribbean. She was the girl, I guess. That's really the only thing I remember her from. And the only... they can't, you know, make weapons out of thin air. They can't move things telekinetically. They can take control of animals and, like, take control of hawks to attack someone, or of snake that should not be in Scotland but takes control of snakes. If you don't like snakes, by the way, do not go to this movie.
You know how I feel about snakes. I don't embrace them.
It's filmed in a nice spot. It's all over Scotland. It's the Isle of Skye. It looks great. The score is the best score of the year so far. I've been playing it on Spotify all week. Apparently Great Britain was very diverse back then because Jaimin Hunsu's hanging out and a guy named Tom Wu. His character name is George. He's got a Fu Manchu. He's hanging out. So it's very diverse. I'm right in the middle on this. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It's silly. It's cheesy. It entertained the heck out of me. What are you feeling about this movie?
Well, and yet this one has a 26% on Rotten Tomatoes versus the Snatched 39%. Mm. So it just goes to show, just you liked this one better.
I did.
Somebody else likes Snatched better. And the reason for the wine tonight, the Game of Thrones connection, two things, actually. There was a trivia tidbit. Did you know that Charlie Hunnam had actually been offered a role in Game of Thrones, but he had to turn it down because he was shooting Lost City of Z?
By this time, who hasn't been on Game of Thrones?
I've never seen Game of Thrones, which is why this movie did not float to the top of my consciousness in terms of there was no way I had another event. I could not see this movie this week, but it's not one that I'm going to race out and try and catch up on. But comparisons are being made to Game of Thrones. And I think because Game of Thrones has become such a pop culture phenom.
But Game of Thrones isn't funny. This has some jokes in it.
It has some jokes in it, but a lot of people take Game of Thrones and their affinity for Game of Thrones very seriously. And so they just might not be inclined to see yet another, why go back to another iteration of the King Arthur story that everyone's
Why are people limiting this to the supposed Game of Thrones audience? Guy Ritchie has a fan base. Charlie Hunnam has a huge fan base from Sons of Anarchy. There's no reason to limit this to an HBO television show.
I don't think they're limiting it to that. I think that a lot of people just didn't like this movie. And the fact that it cost, $175 million?
Heck yeah.
And it's going to tank? There's no way.
Well, it's going to make it back in the global audience.
There is no way.
Leading to my bet.
They can make four more.
I bet you the bottle of wine next week, I'm going to say King Arthur pulls an upset. And it's going to beat Snatched based on word of mouth only. The people on Friday night are going to go see Snatched, and they're going to text all their friends, "Oh my lord, stay away from this thing."
I'm going to take that bet. I don't know what are we betting, but
the next
bottle of wine, it's got to be a good one. But I would say I think that Snatched will beat King Arthur at the box office, but I would hope that anyone who didn't see Guardians of the Galaxy that might just want a good comedy goes to see that one instead. I would love for Guardians of the Galaxy to just stay on top.
Well, it will. Guarantee you, so, Guardians of the Galaxy stays on top.
So if Guardians of the Galaxy stays on top, I do think that that Snatched is going to come in over King Arthur.
No, I got a feeling about it. I do not feel great about my prospects because, you know, it's a female-driven comedy. It's going to take any female who goes to the theater this weekend. But King Arthur just, it's fun. It's so much fun. It's not Guardians of the Galaxy fun. But
I think that's one where I actually feel pretty good about that bet. Right. So I'm taking it.
I'll try to contain myself next week if I accidentally win.
That's right.
All right. Your next up, this is called The Wall. I didn't go see it because I didn't feel like going out that night. But I do have a couple questions after you tell us about what's going on with something called The Wall.
This is another one that is rather divisive in the reviews that I've seen and in the people that I was sitting around. Even the ones that I thought did not think were going to like it, I'm now hearing that they kind of did. And so I don't know exactly why, because I found this movie, just like the issue I had with The Lovers, the ending was so dissatisfying to me that it tainted the entire movie experience. This one, The Wall, is like, it's a psychological war drama, I guess. It's set in 2007 Iraq. The war is technically supposed to be over. Contractors.
It was supposed to be over. I was in Iraq in 2007. The war was not over.
But it was like, why are we still there? Was going on.
All right, I agree. So that question was around.
That question, and that's what this movie is at its heart about. That question: Why are these soldiers still there? And so the premise is that you've got these two soldiers who have gone to check out where a group of contractors working on an oil pipeline had been ambushed, and the security that had been with them had been ambushed, and they were all killed. And so the Aaron Taylor Johnson plays the soldier, and his superior officer is played by world wrestling star John Cena. And essentially, they're the only two people you see on screen this entire movie. And one of them spends about half of that face down in the dirt, unconscious. So you really only see Aaron Taylor Johnson for a solid hour of this movie. And he's communicating with a sniper that that is somewhere unseen out beyond in this expansive cement lot that looks like it could have been shot in a parking lot anywhere.
Probably was.
It probably was. And so it's really what's happening is, so this sniper is taking aim at these two soldiers, and they both get hit, and they try to take cover behind this stone like wall that's crumbling. And so the entire movie is really what's going on behind the communication that's going on via the comms that have been compromised with the soldier behind the wall and the sniper who is somewhere out unseen and talking to the soldier named Isaac. And they are having this psychological, you know, war of words and trying to figure out how to outsmart each other and how to survive in being pinned down behind this wall. And it's kind of brutal because you spend a big chunk of it. Isaac's been wounded. And so it's really, if you're at all squeamish, you're seeing him like pack his wound and apply the tourniquet. And it's just, I mean, I spent my a good chunk of this with my hands over my eyes because it was just kind of gross. So it's a different kind of war movie, and it started out very quiet, no real soundtrack throughout. It started off very promising. I thought it was going to be this really taut, tense, dramatic thriller, and it just was the longest 81 minutes of any movie I've seen in a long time.
It was
for a short movie, it took such a long time to end.
All right, my first question is, John Cena, WWE wrestling star, probably the most famous one just other than The Rock, but he's a very, very famous.
And he was in Trainwreck.
Wrestler. And I wanted to bring up, so he's been in some soldier movies before, but he was, surprisingly, the funniest thing about Trainwreck, perhaps, and the funniest thing about Sisters. So he's a funny guy when he wants to be. How is John Cena in this movie?
He is unconscious.
He said probably like half the time, though.
So when I'd say that he's, you know, that there's that wartime brotherhood bond between him and this other soldier at the beginning of the film, and so their banter is you know, entertaining in its own wartime way. So he's good in the 10-15 minutes that you're watching him up front, and then he kind of disappears from this film for a huge chunk. So this was really strictly Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Oh yeah, you mentioned movie. Aaron Taylor Johnson, the upset Golden Globe winner, over Mahershala Ali. So yeah. Mahershala Ali didn't sweep award season.
That was
Aaron Taylor Johnson. Yeah. Won for Nocturnal Animals, playing the most vile human being who ever lived.
Yeah.
I guess he's redeemed himself a little bit in this film.
He's very good. It's just I was not. I was ready for this movie to end from about the midway point, and I hated the ending. I truly hated the ending, and some people liked it because of the ending. And so I think that's where the divide really comes into play, is if you think of the ending for the half of the crowd that felt that ending was powerful and poignant in its open-endedness and in its lingering questions, then those folks enjoyed it for that reason. Then they feel that there was a this added level of new story, new type of filmmaking with this as a war movie. For someone like me, who admittedly likes to have things a little cleaned up a little more, and I did not buy into this ending, and I found the ending so disturbing that it clouded the rest of the movie for me.
And I want to briefly mention the director. He's a very He's been around a while.
Mm-hmm.
He did the first two Bourne films. In fact, the best one, The Bourne Identity. This guy knows how to direct an action film.
Absolutely.
He did Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt. Awesome movie. He did Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yep.
Yeah.
Great movie. I loved Mr. and Mrs.
Oddly
Smith.
Enough, he did Swingers back in the day. The quotable of quotable movie Swingers. Is he slumming? What is he doing?
I don't know. I was actually quite surprised because that was one of the biggest questions for me is that I really liked, so it's Doug Liman. I really liked all three of the movies that you mentioned that he directed. I liked Bourne Ultimatum. I liked Edge of Tomorrow. I liked Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So when I saw that he was directing this, that's actually one of the reasons that I dragged myself out to the boonies, really, to go see this movie.
This was West End, right?
This was West End.
Folks, this is the nether regions of DuPont Circle.
It is. It is like you have to really be committed to get to this theater. Yeah. And so it was a beautiful day. It was 2 miles. I made the walk. I went and saw this movie. But seeing that Doug Liman was directing it, that was sort of a deciding factor for me because I really liked his action movies. And so I think that doubled my disappointment, is that I don't know exactly how and why he ended up involved with this movie, but I suspect there was some personal connection to it that made him want to direct it. But you talked about how like Guy Ritchie or any of these other directors, and the Snatch director, you felt that it was not up to par with some of their other films. To me, this is not up to par at all for a Doug Liman action movie. It's not an action movie, but for one of his movies.
I think I misspoke on the theater, by the way. I think you went to Atlantic Plumbing.
Atlantic Plumbing, you are correct.
Oh, man, that's out of the way.
Yes.
All right, our final film is a documentary. It's called Obit, and we saw this a year apart. Hannah saw this yesterday, and I saw it a year ago as the first film I saw at the 2016 AFI Docs Film Festival, and it was my favorite of the film festival. I remember in our podcast, I said my favorite was Obit, and it finally got distribution and a release. It's by director Vanessa Gould, and she went to the New York Times, and instead of doing something like Page One, the New York Times, the whole thing in the New York Times, she hung out in the Obit section. She asked, who are you people that write obituaries? How did you get here? How do you write one of these? And what about people like Michael Jackson who die all of a sudden, and you have like 20 minutes to write an obituary? And she takes us like a day in the life of an obituary writer, and it's fascinating. I enjoyed this so much. And I wonder if it's because the audience I saw it with were people who just, you can tell they subscribe to the Times. Mm-hmm. And during the Q&A session, all of them were like, you know what, I get my morning people and I immediately flip to the Obit session. It's not because I'm looking to see what famous or not famous people died. It's because they like the journalists. They like the authors. And a lot of them, about 5 or 6 of them, get screen time and explain how they go about their business and why they do what they do. And this is not the obituary section. You think of The Last Word with the Shirley MacLaine.
Yes.
It's not for the interns. It's not for people that are past their primes. It's for people that are almost in their primes, but this is just their niche. And they don't write about, just because you were a good person, you don't make a good obituary. You have to do something memorable, like the film talks about the guy who invented the Slinky, or the guy who made Kennedy look better than Nixon. And I just had a blast watching this documentary, and I wonder if you feel the same way.
I do, and part of it's because I was a journalism major, so I have that.
Could you write an obituary?
They're tough. They're really hard. One of the obituary writers actually says, at one point, somebody said, can you write it fast and short? And it's like, you can't. It's harder to write something short if you don't have much time. You end up going longer. And so the challenge of writing under deadline when somebody, every day, to have to sort of start anew. And they talk about how, you don't have a Rolodex of sources to turn to when you're handed an obit for somebody that's just died. You are digging into their life story, jumping in head first immediately and trying to get all these biographical details and getting confirmation. It's a real challenge. And these are good writers. And I think that's why the obits, are so well received, is that each of these is a fascinating story. And these individual writers and editors on the Obit desk are veteran journalists who...
They didn't start there.
They did not start there. Some had been, were music critics and just features that, features writers. The editor has a strong role too, where he then has to sell the front page, sell the in the... meeting, in the daily meeting, talking about what's going to make the front page the next day, he needs to promote the work of his team and say, does this person rise to the level of a front page story or above the fold? Or do they get that little box at the bottom that
teases you?
Yeah. And it's fascinating to just see how all of that comes into play. And then the guy who like lives in the vault in the
Jeff
morgue.
Roth, the guy who lives in the
morgue.
It's like the clippings room.
Yes,
it's full of file cabinets and boxes, and only he knows where everything is.
Yes, and it is referred to as the morgue.
The morgue.
The room where all those boxes and filing cabinets are kept. And he was an odd duck, though.
Odd ducks make for good documentary characters.
Yes.
I loved the urban legends they talk about. There's a time they ran an obituary on a person who was still alive. We know obituaries are sometimes written about people who are still alive because you expect them to die soon, Keith Richards. There was the lady whose obituary they wrote in 1935, who's still alive.
She was a stunt plane person. Yeah,
like
they
a
were
stunt
just,
pilot.
They were so sure.
And they knew she was going to die. They wrote her obituary in 1935, and she's still alive.
Or didn't they know where she died, and they had to dig out her? When they were writing her obituary, they discovered that one had already been written decades before. They pull out these great little tidbits. You learn so much. I mean, the thing I learned is that, I don't know if you remember this since it was a year ago, but the leading verb dies, only appears in the lead obituary, in the headline. So if you look at the obituary section for the New York Times, you will only see the word dies in the lead obit. And all the other headlines don't include that word because you've already established that this is the page of obits where people had died. And it's only the lead story, the lead obituary that dies in the headline, which I found fascinating.
After I saw this film, I started paying attention to the obituary section in newspapers. I subscribe to the Post every day, every year. And then every now and then I subscribe to the New York Times for about 3 months, a period when it goes on sale. And the Times obituary section is just a league. It's a different sport.
Yeah.
It looks different. It feels different. It's professional. The Post, nothing against them. It's just, it's second tier. It doesn't matter. But the Times obit section is, it's a section.
It is.
It's a page.
It is. And that's what makes this almost a companion piece to page one, where you are going inside the New York Times for that film. So certainly if you like that documentary, then this one kind of is like even more. Here's another area of the paper that you're just going to be a fly on the wall for what's going on while they're crafting some of these obits and talking about some of their favorites in the past and how it all comes together. And it really is just entertaining and fascinating and morbidly entertaining all at the same time.
All right. Quick wrap up out of the five movies, but kind of three different ones we saw. Snatched. Hannah thinks it's going to win The Weeknd, or at least between Snatched and King Arthur. I say, blech, it's not funny.
I say I'm going to wait and see what the word of mouth from some other folks I know yields.
Guy Ritchie's King Arthur Legend of the Sword is entertaining. I had fun. It's not great, but I had fun.
And that's one of those types of movies that I'm glad you had fun. I think it's important that there are some movies that people just go and have fun, and it doesn't have to be anything more than that. And so I think for some people it's going to be Snatched, and for some people it's going to be King Arthur.
And it will make $10 more than Snatched this weekend. $10. The Lovers.
The Lovers is going to be a tough sell. I think it's definitely for mature audiences. It's a movies for grown-ups kind of movie. For those who are curious about where Deborah Winger's been and how she does these days. But I would say if the dinner from last week didn't go anywhere, I don't think this one's going to go anywhere either.
The Wall. And not Pink Floyd's The Wall, The Wall.
I prefer Pink Floyd's The Wall.
We all do.
I don't know. I personally did not like this movie, and some people really have. So it's more of a cerebral war film rather than an action war movie. So it's going to be very divisive, and I don't think that many people are going to see it.
I think Obit is the best film of the week. You see a slice of a newspaper you never see, and it busts some stereotypes.
Yeah, I hate to agree with you, but I do. I think
why
out
do you
of
hate to agree with
I hate to agree with you. Out of all of the movies we've talked about tonight, I would say that Obit was my favorite as well.
Good for you. Yeah, look at you.
Every once in a while it happens.
All right. Well, on behalf of the Cinema Clash, I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.